Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling.
What do you guys want to talk about?
Let's give the people what they want. Professional wrestling.
With Mike McGuire.
The happiest Canadian camper in the world.
Tell me when I'm telling lies.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hello once again, my friend. Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling. I'm Mike McGuire. Thank you for checking out the show. If you like what you're hearing, do me a solid. Give the show a 5-star rating. Leave a comment. The show is growing. People are noticing. And again, it's all because of you. So thank you again. My promise to you, this show will always be free. And this show will always focus on wrestling. And we are focusing on wrestling of all types this week. If you'd like to interact with the show, reach out to me anytime. There's no database, no mailing list. You can find me anywhere on social at McGuire Show. Or if you'd like to submit an email, McGuireShow@yahoo.com. Coming up this week, CM Punk is officially back in AEW, starting at AEW's Collision. Does this mean a Summer of Punk Canadian tour? We finally find out where Alexa Bliss has been. WWE helps lighten Roman Reigns' luggage. Toronto is getting a pair of dream matches in the Forbidden Door 2 card. And with months, maybe even more than a year before it happens, why are fight fans pushing for one person to main event UFC 300? Plus, what's it like to be the only independent promoter left in North America doing extended tours? You'll meet Danny Warren, a.k.a. Danny Duggan, who's been doing just that for years now. Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer is also back. There's a lot to unpack with him from this past week. He was also at AEW's Double or Nothing, so we'll get his perspective on that show. And a lot more, but first...
You want to hear the breaking news?
As we get closer to AEW's launch of their new Saturday show, Collision, Tony Khan made the announcement that the debut episode will in fact feature CM Punk. The announcements for Collision have been rolling out kind of slowly. Punk was finally advertised 2 weeks after the initial announcement that the Saturday show was official. Now, there's been some speculation and unconfirmed reports that the deal almost fell through last minute, although those details have not been released by anyone. The key story in all of this, though, is that on June 17th, CM Punk, after suffering a very serious injury, will be returning to the company on AEW Saturday Collision. As for everything around that, I got some questions. We'll bring them up with Meltzer as the show goes on. It's baby-making time for a couple of popular women in wrestling. Congratulations going out to Sammy Guevara and Ty Mello, who announced that they are expecting. You might remember if you were watching Double or Nothing, they went public with the cue cards. Yeah, it was a good time. Also, congratulations going out to Alexa Bliss, who's been off WWE for some time. She and her husband, Ryan Cabrera, announced their pregnancy on Instagram this past week. The Cabreras have mentioned that this baby was, quote, completely unexpected. Well, kids, they've found out what's causing that now, so maybe it's time you have a talk. Seriously, though, great news and all the best to both couples. Roman Reigns' luggage is getting a little lighter now as the undisputed WWE Universal Champion was presented with a new belt to merge his current championships into one. While this belt is very similar to the 10 other iterations of the WWE Championship since The Rock debuted his Scratch logo title, the new belt is black with gold trim. The blank space behind the WWE logo on the front plate is now covered with gold-stamped leather. The logo itself has black stones, and the words Undisputed Champion read along the bottom of the front plate. Much like they did with Seth Rollins' new World Heavyweight Championship, WWE Shop is already on the ball and accepting pre-orders for replicas of the new belt. They retail at $499.99 US or $671.99 Canadian. As of recording date, that starts shipping out this August. Speaking of Seth Rollins and the new World Heavyweight Championship, the first defense of his title has already happened at a WWE house show. Last night, Rollins defended the championship against The Miz in White Plains, New York. In other storyline updates, LA Knight has moved on to the Money in the Bank ladder match after a win over Montez Ford on SmackDown. Knight joins Ricochet and Shinsuke Nakamura in the men's match, with more participants being decided this week. Zelina Vega also got a spot in the women's ladder match. More women's qualifying matches take place this week as well. And some matches have been made for AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling's Forbidden Door 2, taking place in Toronto later this month. The much-hoped-for rematch between Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay will take place for the IWGP United States Championship. You may remember Omega won that title from Ospreay at Wrestle Kingdom in January of this year. Another dream match takes place at the Scotiabank Arena as Brian Danielson has challenged Kazuchika Okada to a one-on-one match at the Forbidden Door event. Danielson made the challenge in a video shot in the Red Rocks of Nevada. The challenge played during the New Japan Dominion event early this morning here in North America. If you're one of the lucky ones that has tickets to this show, you've already outdone yourself. Congratulations.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer, McGuire on Wrestling.
Dave Meltzer is back after a couple weeks away. How are you doing, sir?
Really good. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. You looked like you had an exciting couple weeks for some good reasons, to say the least. And of course, there's lots to talk about. I wanted to get this in quickly, and hopefully we can get through it because it's funny. We've had some internet connection issues here, but there's this Jacques Rougeau reality competition. It's happening again tonight in Montreal. They've got wrestlers from all across Canada coming in, and they get a shot at the Nightmare Factory, as well as 3 months of training there, a pile of cash, and a shot at AEW in a dark match. I guess some of the Toronto dark matches that happened for Dark and Dark Elevation were a result of this thing last year. So I'd never heard of this thing before. Have you heard of it?
I had never heard of it before either. No. No.
Yeah, well,
and it's interesting because they don't do Dark and Dark Elevation anymore either.
Well, and that's the interesting thing now. So I'm wondering if the AEW component is still in there, but QT is all in on this thing. So it almost sounds like one of those too good to be true stories. And in the world of indie wrestling, as you know, it can be, but it might be worth checking out. So I want to let you know about that quickly here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, gee, which story do you want to pick first here? I think we have to go with finally having the announcement of CM Punk being a part of the launch of Collision. This is crazy, man. why was this staggered so much? Why did it take so long for this to come out this way?
I think at first maybe they had an idea of keeping it a secret, but based on, you know, they really couldn't. You know what I mean? It's like you had tickets you had to sell for these shows, and they weren't selling. If Hamilton and Toronto and Regina and those places were all like selling really big. Because Chicago was going to do fine. I think that at that point you could just do it like last time, you know, just make it a big surprise. And even though everyone knows, and, you know, just follow the playbook that you did. And, you know, you couldn't do it this year. I mean, some people are going like, why did they do it like this? And it's like, there was no other choice. You know, you have to sell tickets. You can't be coming into these buildings with no, you know, early on in this Collision thing or any time in this Collision thing with really small crowds. You've got to get those. You got to have some people in the stands and, hopefully CM Punk means something and sells a lot of tickets and the shows, you know, I mean, they had weak advances. So it pretty much necessitated the announcement this week, I think.
Okay. So let's circle back to that in a second here. I want to go back to last week. You were there at AEW Double or Nothing. A lot of fans on the internet, a lot of people that watched the show. I enjoyed the show. But there was a lot of criticism, a lot of feedback that the crowd was largely dead for, especially the first half of the show, it seemed, and there seemed to be a lot of things that were just kind of happening all at once here. What's your take on how the crowd was that night and how the show went?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I was at the Revolution show in San Francisco, and I was sitting, I was basically in the same part of the arena for both events, and I didn't notice much of a difference. And everyone's talked about how wild and great the San Francisco crowd was, and I didn't notice this. I didn't think the San Francisco crowd was anything. Like they were good and they were great in the main event and in, you know, the three big matches. And in this one, I thought it was the same thing. I thought the crowd was like great in the last couple of matches and for the Battle Royal. So the three big matches, I thought the crowd was on fire. And the rest of the show, you know, was hit and miss. They had, you know, the FTR match by the finish with the people were very with it. Some of the other, the Chris Statlander thing was over gigantic in the building. So, I mean, I thought the crowd was very similar to San Francisco. So it's just a question of, I guess, how it was mic'd. You know, I mean, that's the only thing I can come up with because I noticed, again, I was there and I noticed no major difference.
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, obviously the Statlander thing is what's being credited as waking up the crowd again. I mean, the Battle Royal was what it was. It went on and
Battle Royal was huge, was real big in the building, especially the crowd loved the Mexicans. They hated Jay White. You know, some of the guys who you would think are not really pushed really got big reactions. And I thought it was really well put together Battle Royal. You know, some of the stuff, it was hit and miss. I mean, there was some of the matches weren't that good. I don't think anything was overtly bad other than, you know, the Jamie Hayter match obviously was what it was because of her injury, and it was all they could do is they said to get the title off of her as quick as possible. And that's an unfortunate thing, but that's just the hand that was handed to you. And that happens all the time in wrestling too, where you have somebody hurt and you have to do a short match and just get the result that you need. I mean, the on the Jamie Hayter thing, the alternative is you don't have the match, and then you strip her of the title and you do the interim title thing, and nobody, after the Thunder Rosa thing, nobody wanted to do that again.
Those interim titles have been a bad idea from the start. But
right. So they had no choice. I mean, it's like she couldn't do a match. So you go in there and do the best that you can. And, you know, that was just what was handed to you. So I can't get mad at the promotion over that. It's just what it was. And the crowd was very into Jade Cargill and Taya, you know, more than probably in some ways more than the match itself. I mean, they popped even bigger for Chris, but when Jade Cargill and Taya came out, I mean, I remember thinking like, wow, you know, I thought the crowd would not be good for this because of a lot of the pay-per-views that I go to. The Jade Cargill match does not get a big response. And in this one, from the start, it got a big response. It was
You know what I can credit that to, I think, and tell me if you agree or not, but they both came out like stars.
Yes. Yes. I think that was a lot. I think that the build was interesting because they portrayed Taya as the first one who really had a shot to win. And when she hit the Road to Valhalla, people did think, wow, you know, I mean, there's a shot. I mean, I don't think everyone expected she's going to count out a kick out because, you know, the Jade never loses. I do think that when Jade hit the Jaded, which is the same move, because Ty had kicked out, nobody did expect Taya not to kick out because it's kind of like, well, she kicked out, so she's going to kick out. And when that didn't happen, I do think the finish was a little flat. But then Chris came out, and the idea was, you know, to build everything up for Chris. So it ended up being, you know, pretty good.
Monster celebration, big confetti, all that. And then,
yeah, and the confetti led to the using of the, what's it called? The leaf blower, which ended up being a weapon used in the next match. So it all played out, so to speak. That was kind of an interesting, that was a smart thing to do.
So let's get to the title match then, the Four Pillars. There was some argument that maybe MJF was kind of outclassing his three opponents here when it came to star power. What do you feel about that?
I mean, he did, and she was the biggest star in the match to the people. Darby being second, it was just what it was. I think that maybe MJF and Darby would have been maybe a more marketable match, but at the same time, when the pay-per-view numbers came in, I can't complain anymore. You know, it's like that at the end of the day, did people buy it or did they not? It's like the people bought it. So it worked out fine. The match was fantastic. Sammy Guevara was out of this world, and Jack Perry he's always good. He's always really good. Darby's, you know, obviously works ridiculously hard. And Max is a very, very underrated wrestler. He's much better than he gets credit for, in the sense that every time he goes, I mean, he doesn't wrestle a lot, but when he does wrestle, the matches are classic, and he's always in the right place at the right time. I mean, his basics are very good.
Do you think it's time for Jack Perry to turn heel?
It wouldn't bother me at all. You know, I mean, when I watched the crowd reaction, I mean, the crowd sure wanted him to turn heel. They really wanted him to turn on Darby Allin at that finish. I mean, that was a unique crowd reaction because he had the chair and they were all with him. Even though they loved Darby, they were all with him hitting Darby with that chair. And when he didn't hit Darby with the chair, they booed him. So they wanted to, you know, it's funny. It's not like they disliked him, but they wanted him to turn heel. And which is a unique dynamic. And then when he didn't, then they were mad because they were, you know, it's like this is a perfect time for him to turn heel. So crowds kind of booking the shows, trying to book the shows. And sometimes when the crowd's got a really big idea of what they want and you're doing something different, there's kind of a disconnect. I mean, just we had that in AEW before, you know, many times with Sammy Guevara's babyface turn. With Cody at one point, they messed it up, you know, and they messed up the plans and everything. So, and who knows what effect they had on the long term of the business. Well, but it's just, you know, AEW fans are going to be more like that right now than WWE fans. That's just how it is.
I just wonder, though, because I mean, and I'm not one to jump on board with, I mean, anybody can have a bad day, that sort of thing. But there was a little bit of negative publicity going around about Jack appearing at a couple events in the UK. And I don't know, he just comes out and I just get this vibe like, maybe it would be like a Dom Mysterio thing where Dom Mysterio came out and I never really bought into babyface Dom. And a lot of fans kind of like, oh yeah, he's kind of going through the motions. And I just think that maybe a heel Jack Perry might invigorate him, might make him, you know, and this would be an opportune time to do it. But
I mean, the thing with Jack Perry, though, is he's super in the ring. You know, I mean, he's great. Dom wasn't as great, but Dom had the great storyline and they worked really hard on the storyline and it worked. You know, I wouldn't have been against it. I mean, when he on Wednesday, when he came out with that chair with Hook, I was thinking, hey, he's going to hit Hook with the chair, you know, and he didn't. But It was like it was in my mind. So I think it's in everyone's mind that it could happen, and perhaps it will. I don't see any reason for it not to happen. I don't think it's the end of the world if it doesn't. So it's just a decision based on what they have long term for him. You know, I mean, the creative teams got their idea, but I think that for him right now, it probably is a good idea for him to go heel. Yes.
Okay, so let's circle back now to AEW Saturday Collision. We've talked about the Chicago show. We've talked a little bit about these beleaguered Canadian dates, especially the ones out here in the prairies that I keep talking about. And man, I'm wishing the numbers would just get better. But again, like it's 91 degrees Fahrenheit here today. That's our high. And people are taking off for the lake and doing what they can. Is there a chance in some concert situations, a lot of artists, if shows aren't selling like these shows aren't selling, they'll pull the show. Is there a chance at this point that AEW can pull any of these shows and move them?
No, because you've got to do live television. And every one of these shows is none of these are house shows. You could cut a house show.
Yeah.
But you've got to do those television tapings. I mean, so no, there's no chance. And it's too late to move to another place, and another place would have to be in the same vicinity anyway. So no,
is impossible to do because everything's so spread apart.
Right. So I think there's no chance that those shows would be canceled.
Okay. So those of you that have tickets to perhaps Regina or Hamilton, you know, you'll still have a show apparently. What do you think is causing this downtick? I mean, people are talking about Chicago and how they only opened it up for 8,000 or so. Is AEW
Chicago will end up well over that. It's with what you open up for. That's like one of those weird things. It's like you open up for what you predict you will sell early, and then you open up more sections afterwards. So, you know, what you open up for doesn't mean it does. It's a stat that means nothing other than a very conservative number, which sometimes you don't meet, right, of what you think you're going to sell on the first day, and then you start adding more. So, I mean, I know obviously they hope to sell out Chicago. I don't know that they will get to a complete sellout, but, you know, I mean, I think they'll get to 9 to 10. Maybe lucky if it's more, maybe Punk, you know, Punk will mean a lot in Chicago. So Chicago will be fine. You know, the other cities, yeah, they're below what I would have expected, you know, in all cases.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Punk's going to be on the road for all these shows?
Kind of has to be, I think.
Yeah.
They don't. I mean, he's got to be the star of that Saturday show, especially in those early weeks. He's got to be on every show in a big program. He's the star of the show. I'm not saying he's got to be there 52 weeks a year, but he's got to be there most weeks. And at the beginning, I think he has to be there every week. Yeah.
I just worry about it. And again, I'm not knocking anybody in this. It's just, they'll be what, 3 or 4 weeks in when they hit that Regina date? And it's just like,
Regina's what, the fourth week?
Yeah, it'll be the fourth week. And
Hamilton's the bad one. I mean, Regina too. Hamilton and Regina are the bad ones. Toronto is not good, and it's very disappointing without a doubt. But it's not, you know, it's not as bad. I mean, Hamilton's the scary one though. Yeah.
Well, and this is where I go back to even Chicago. Like, are they burning their own territories a bit here? Because they're going to run a lot in Toronto, especially with Forbidden Door. I mean, for me as a wrestling fan, I got so much money. You know, am I going to go to Forbidden Door, or am I going to go to Collision? Collision's going to be back again. Forbidden Door is probably not going to be coming back anytime soon.
Forbidden Door's already sold out. So, yeah. You know, I mean,
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Like, but, and I think that one of the problems is that you have, you know, and also we don't even know if Collision's going to air in Canada, which is a big thing. So you're taping a TV show in a country where it doesn't air, so it doesn't feel like a TV taping to people in that country like it might in the United States. Mm-hmm. So that's another issue. Well, you know, again, we've had no announcement about Collision in Canada, and Rampage isn't even on in Canada. So there you go.
Just going back to the CM Punk story a bit here, one of the stories that came out was that Ace Steel had actually been rehired and was working remotely with the company. I mean, obviously it's none of our business really, but at the same time, when everybody was following everything else that was going on, how did this story go unnoticed, or did
because it was kept secret from everybody? I knew about it, and it was denied to me because, you know, nobody knew actually. And then also I think that Tony didn't really want it out because he told nobody. So Tony knew, Punk knew, Ace knew. I mean, there were others who knew, but most people, like the wrestlers, most of the wrestlers knew. You know, I couldn't tell you when, but the first of the wrestlers knew, I'm going to say a week before it happened, but he'd been hired, you know, I don't know the exact date, but I think it's like 6 weeks before anyone knew. Yeah. It was kept secret for, you know, I guess it's AEW. You know what I mean? It's like, it's one of the issues that's there is the secrecy aspect, and it's good and it's bad. And, you know, when the people found out that he was hired and they didn't know, and it came from, you know, they heard about it from me or somebody else, you know, it was, you know, I don't think they want to hear that stuff from not in the company. So it was, but, you know, it is what it is. And he's going to be working remote and, you know, not at the shows, which he, you know, I know that he thought and Punk thought that he was going to be working at the shows, but it's all worked out for now, you know, and we'll see what happens. You know, I mean, who can predict the future? I mean, with Punk, you know, it's like we have track record. We don't know what's going to happen. So,
well, and
hopefully it all works out.
You know, this will be the last thing we talk about on this one, because I do want to move on here. But I mean, there is an argument that the reason why Punk has been gone and the reason why we haven't seen him is because he was injured. I mean, that was a very serious injury that he had as well.
That was the reason. As far as, especially when they added the new show, it was imperative for the new show to have a big star in the show. If it was the old situation, the dynamics are different. Once you add the new show, the dynamics change. There's a lot of money issues. WBD absolutely wanted him. Mm-hmm. So you try to acquiesce your broadcast partners, but also you need to have a show that's going to do well, and the best chance to do well is him. So I understand completely why the decision was made. I know there's people who disagree with it because of what happened last year, but it's like, it's a business. And
that's what I want to ask you, Dave, is how much of this do you think is still based on what happened on All Out? Maybe some of it is just timing after all. And maybe we're getting in our own heads about this a bit, because when I hear a polarizing response to CM Punk coming back, obviously that means that fans are paying attention to the noise in the background and, you know, things that you and I have to talk about and address because people hear about it. But I mean, there was a whole injury in this side as well. So how much of this do you think is really drama versus what you say business and things just need to line up the way they need to line up before all the announcements could be made? And maybe it was just a mistake in how they announced things.
I mean, you know, everything happened. There's a million different things that happened. Everything under the sun had been considered. Mm-hmm. And this was the decision once they got the TV. But, you know, I mean, there were points in the last 5 weeks and more than one where it looked like it could have fallen apart. So, right. You know, it's like and things that people don't even know about. So it's like it's actually more than people know, not less. But in the end, you know, it's like they came to an agreement and, you know, then now it has to play out. And it's, you know, it'd be tough because I think he's got a lot of leverage, because if he leaves, I think that show's really going to be hurt. And I can't say they can't afford a failure on the show, but it's certainly not something you would want to do right now, especially, you know, in your contract year. And it looks like the not this year, it looks like it's going to be next year now, but because of the option and everything and the Collision deal, which is, I believe, through the end of September of 2024. So because of that, there's another year of, so it's very important for them to have two successful shows to get the best contract next year. And, you know, him being there and happy and having productive programs is a key part of this story. So, yeah, you know, it's a big deal. And yeah, I think he's got a lot of leverage right now, but so we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out.
Okay. I lied. There's one more thing I want to ask about this. We've talked about it before. In fact, I had your colleague Josh Nason on last week here on the show filling in for you, but he and I talked about this a bit. I've said before, and I'll say it again, there's a gigantic pile of money left on the table if they don't do something with Punk and the FTR versus the Elite. Do you, and this is just opinion, do you think that it makes sense to do that? Or do you think, for the benefit of those involved and the company moving forward, do they ignore it on TV and not talk about it at all?
I think that it at some point needs to be done. And I think that I wish that they had talked about it on All Access, but I know why they didn't. And, you know, anything that has a groundswell of interest, you try to get business out of. So, you know, as far as getting everyone on the same page, they just need to do it. Yeah. You know, as far as, you know, again, the other side is that you want to lock the other guys up because their deals are up at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know 100% what's going to happen, but yes, I would talk about it extensively on television and build it up, and don't pretend, I mean, because if you go in there and you put it out there, but you don't really build it up on your own television, yeah, there will still be interest, but you will not maximize your interest or even come close to maximizing your interest. So I think it should be talked about. But they're afraid to talk about it. That's the problem. It's a really weird situation. But of course, for business, what's the best thing? The best thing is to do it.
I think the only way it can be done is if they literally map it out like a story. And I don't want to get too insy on this, but you know, it has to become an agreed thing where, you know what, nobody goes into business for themselves on either side. Nobody makes snide comments outside of what's agreed to. And we build this like an actual storyline and then have the payoff in the end.
That's what they That's what they need. That's what they need to do. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and many, many big programs, you know, Rock and John Cena started from an actual real situation where, you know, Dwayne was not happy with them and they decided to make money with it. And there's been many, many others. Lawler and Dundee were like that for years in Memphis. It's like, it's not, you know, Lawler and Savage, you know, it's not unheard of. It's done all the time. And, you know, you sometimes, and many times it's not done. You know, I mean, there's been many instances where there's giant money that you would think for a match that ends up never happening. So it goes both ways, and timing will be it. I think, you know, they all have to work together. I mean, that's just the end of the thing to make it work.
Well, that's just it. It's time to do some business here. Now let's shift over from AEW finally. And we talked about this, Josh and I did last week, about Seth Rollins being the new world heavyweight champion. That happened in Saudi Arabia. To what end, though? And I say this because we talked about viable opponents for Rollins, and there doesn't really seem to be any right now. Where do you see them going with this thing? Because I know he just had his first title defense at a house show against The Miz, which if you
go
by contender logic, that makes no sense. But whatever, it's a star versus a star, and that's the title defense. He does it as an open challenge. I guess it's Damian Priest tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw.
Which, by the way, the Damian Priest thing makes absolutely no sense because Damian Priest had no business taking the pin last Monday if he was going to get a title shot this week.
Right.
I mean, when I saw that, it's like, boy, you didn't even, on last Monday night, they could not have known they were doing this, because if they had known they were doing this, they'd had Finn take the pin. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason for Finn not to have taken the pin, but Damian took the pin.
So I'll pose this to you as well, because I had thrown out some names. I had thrown out Priest as a name to build to, not just to throw on to Monday this week. I'd also thrown out Shinsuke Nakamura.
I mean, you can do that. It's a good match.
Yeah. Again, it needs the build, right? So I guess they're going to try and use this Money in the Bank thing to start a story. Well, I think
Money in the Bank winner might be the person, whoever it turns out to be, could do it. You know, you got McIntyre when he comes back. I think that's an easy one. I think Lesnar, but I know that that's not in the cards right now. I mean, down the road, could it be in the cards? Sure. Gunther down the road, of course. That's another one. Yeah. Yeah.
And I threw this out and it got a good laugh, but at the same time, I was kind of serious about it. Do they try and throw Omos into this picture?
You know, he beat Omos.
I know.
So it's like that kind of takes that. I mean, you can still do it. But it tells me if they do it, that they weren't thinking in advance, because if they were thinking in advance, they would have done a DQ there, you know. Mm-hmm. So to protect Omos for this match, could they do it? Yes. They're doing it this week with Priest. It's like you can see what is being, you know, there's a lot of stuff. And, you know, and obviously we know that the entire match was thrown together by Vince at the last minute, last Monday, the tag team match at the end that Priest got beat. So maybe, you know, Triple H had this planned and Vince just goes, nope, we're doing this. And now it makes no sense. You know, that's the story of WWE for the last couple of years, in the sense that the writers may have a long-term program and Vince comes in and rips it up. And when he does, now you take, you know, now it makes no sense again. So, but the thing with WWE also is that the fan base doesn't really care that much. I mean, there are fans who do, but for the most part, they don't. They've been taught wins and losses mean nothing for this very reason. Mm-hmm. So you just take what you take what you're given, you know, and some people will get mad at that, but it's working for them. You know, if it was failing for them, I would say, you know, don't do it anymore. But when it's working, you know, you go like, hey, it's working. You know, you learn from what works. And right now their business is doing great.
How do you feel about the title staying as an open challenge title right now? Because that seems to be what they're doing.
It's interesting. It's an experiment. I don't have a problem with it. I would
for the US or the Intercontinental, it made sense. But this is the world championship, and we don't have a streamlined story? Like,
well, get a story, you know, use this to fill time between a story. I think that they want to get Seth and the belt over by, you know, by having him get some wins right now. And that makes sense. Wins from people who you can beat before you get to, you know, Drew McIntyre or Lesnar or, you know, whomever else, Cody, you know, you can do baby faces, you know, you can do Cody at some point and should probably, unless you've got some other reasons not to. I mean, it's, you know, again, there's a lot of different people. And the thing also is almost everyone on the roster is talented. So you can go out there and you're going to have an acceptably good match. And with Seth, you know, most of the matches are going to be great. So, you know, that's not, you know, I mean, you just, when wins and losses don't matter, you can put almost anyone on the roster in there and give them a little bit of juice and have them go out there and Seth will have a good match with most of them. So almost all of them, really.
So obviously there's money in a Cody Rollins feud down the line, but where does Cody Brock 3 happen before that?
I mean, I think it's going to be one of the next two shows. I think it's either going to be Money in the Bank or SummerSlam. And I don't know which one it will be. You know, it depends on if Brock is, I have not heard officially Brock's working London. So if he's not, then we're going with SummerSlam.
That makes sense. I mean, it would give time to sell the healing of the broken arm and everything else going on in that storyline. So I suppose SummerSlam is probably the bigger ticket event as well in the long.
It's the bigger event. Yeah. Even though London's a big event, SummerSlam is the bigger event of the two.
Mm-hmm. And plus they need to do something big on North American soil again. I mean, they've had some great overseas and, you know, out of mainland country, you know, with Puerto Rico show. I mean, I know it's still part of America, but it's one of those things where it's like, okay, let's get something
continental United States. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So from WWE, there's an interesting story in the fight world brewing. I love this idea for some reasons. I know we've talked a little bit about it before. I mean, we're only at UFC 289 going into next weekend here, but even Ariel Helwani just posted, let's go ahead and make Jim Miller the headline of UFC.
Not the headline. I mean, I like, but it's like, I do like the idea of Jim Miller on UFC 300 and then retiring. And I think it's been talked about. And I think that, you know, provided, you know, he'll probably do one match before then. And provided he, you know, he just looked good over the weekend. He had a big win. Mm-hmm. So, the idea of the Jim Miller fights on UFC 100, 200, 300, and then retires at 300. I think that's a nice storyline. And it's a great, you know, he'll probably be the winningest fighter. He is the winningest fighter right now. So if he, you know, the winningest fighter in history, you know, even though he's kind of a journeyman fighter, it's kind of like it's a cool thing. I like the idea of him retiring at UFC 300. Yeah.
Has he held a championship?
No, never.
Yeah. I didn't think so. I just wanted to double check that and make sure.
Because he's the winningest fighter of all time and has never held a championship. And he's been around for, I think like 17 years, something like that. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's, you know, right. He's been around forever.
I don't know, man. You get that guy a title shot. That sounds to me like a UFC story that gets the mainstream in.
Yeah, and that division, though, you know, I mean, that's tough. That's a tough one. That's more of a, that, you know, he's not at that level, I think, is the best way to put it. And I think that in pro wrestling, that's okay. But in MMA, I'm not really up for him getting a title shot, no. If he was fighting at a near championship level, I would say yes, but he's really not. He hasn't beaten, you know, and there's so many guys, you know, there's so many top contenders in that division. He isn't beating them. So, no.
Well, hey, I'm a wrestling fan more than I am a UFC fan. So I always go for the storyline. But you know what? I find this guy fascinating. I find it interesting how many articles are being written about Jim Miller and UFC 300. So either way, I hope it happens. I hope he has a great showing. And I mean, what a great story.
It's almost a year away. So it'll be like probably like what April, May next year, 300. Yeah.
Crazy. All right, Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer. Great to have you back. We'll have a lot more to talk about next week as well. But what are some things that people can read about in the most recent edition of the Observer?
Well, we got a big story on Brian Dixon, who's one of the most important figures, or very interesting figure in the UK. Mm-hmm. It was the leading promoter in the country. We have, you know, coverage of all the shows from last weekend. A lot of business, a lot of lessons of NXT and AEW doing their big shows head to head, and you know, what we've learned from who's watching and things like that, and should it be done again, and which, by the way, the answer is no.
just from a watching standpoint alone, like,
yeah. But I mean, look, you never know. But we got all that, and just like how the AEW show did, and and how the Night of Champions did as far as interest level went, and the more on Billy Graham funeral, and just all kinds of AEW stuff, and WWE stuff as far as just news and future ideas and future angles and all of that kind of stuff.
I mean, people are having to trade shifts at work to just watch all the wrestling in a weekend now. But
man, it's hard. Last weekend was tough. Last weekend coming back, that was a very tough week for me, writing about all those different shows.
See, I tried to watch as much as I could, and I found myself like literally just having to stagger and
yeah. And we also covered Best of the Super Juniors, which was a fantastic tournament. I mean, really, that final match was, match of the year caliber.
I didn't watch the final match. I did not watch anything else except that final match. But I agree with you 100%. That was a ton of fun. So,
yeah,
so much wrestling. I mean, what a time to be alive. An embarrassment of riches. Dave Meltzer from The Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com. Thank you very much, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, have a great week.
McGuire on Wrestling.
It was nice to catch up with Meltzer, get his thoughts on some of these things. Yeah, I'm really wondering if CM Punk is going to go ahead and do the tour across Canada, because I think that if there was any question about whether or not you wanted to have that guy heel or face, I'm pretty sure Canada would turn him face pretty quick. But speaking of touring across Canada, my next guest, he has actually spent over a decade doing just that with his own wrestling company, Canada's Wrestling Elite. A few weeks ago, you might remember, they brought Tessa Blanchard through Canada, and I had the chance to catch up with her on the show. Afterwards, I said, Danny, we got to do this. We've been talking about doing it for over a year now. Let's have you on the show to talk about what it's like to be an independent wrestling promoter across Canada in 2023. Nobody else is doing as many cross-Canada tours as what he does these days, at least nobody outside of the big companies, but CWE is out there. There's been some high times. There's been some low times. And here to tell us all about it now, if you're a fan of indie wrestling, get a load of some of these stories and maybe it gives you an even bigger appreciation for it. This is Danny Duggan, a.k.a. Danny Warren. Check it out. As many an independent show promoter ends up, we are in a small, secluded room. I'm guessing this is where the money was counted tonight.
This is exactly where the money was counted tonight.
Danny Warren, a.k.a. Danny Duggan. What do I call you? Owner, CEO? What do you want to be of CWE?
The moron that runs this ship. The owner, founder, performer, I do it all.
Danny, thanks for coming on, man. We've been wanting to do this for a while. At least I've been wanting to get you on here. We had Jimmy Jacobs on the show a little while ago, and he was saying how nobody does really what you're doing anymore. And by that, I'm talking about doing extended independent tours. There are promotions that'll do like spot shows here and there, that sort of thing, but nobody's really doing 10-day, 20-day, 30-day stretches. How many years have you been doing it like this now, minus COVID in the middle?
We started CWE in January 2009, and for that first year, we were strictly a once-a-month local independent out of Winnipeg. January 2010, we started going on the road and touring, and ever since then, it's been nonstop. So we started doing five-day tours back then, and then by the middle of the decade, we were going up to 10 dates, 15 dates. And pre-COVID, the last tour we did, I believe, was 38 days across British Columbia through Ontario.
So when you decide, I'm going to go out there, this is in a time, and I mean, there's still a time like that where there's local promotions where everybody can get a little worked up, and I'm going to go ahead and say it. Some people start buying into their own stuff a little too much and think, well, this is my territory. What are you doing coming in? Is that really a thing? And that's not out of disrespect to these people either, but is it still such a thing as crossing into a territory these days?
Yes and no. When we first started touring across the country and going into other provinces in 2012 through 17, into different areas, there was a lot of resistance because it was very much, this is my town, stay out of my town. None of my guys are allowed to wrestle for you. We're not supporting you in any which way. Where I very much took a proactive approach. Every time we were going to be expanding and going into a new market, I would reach out to the local promoters in those markets and say, hey, we're coming through. We'd love to work with you, not against you. If there's any way we can collaborate and use your talent. We'd be more than happy to. We'll promote your dates at our event. And we were told to put it kindly, by quite a few promoters along the way, because there's a lot of insecurity of, oh, they're coming to town, they're going to try to take over my town, they're going to try to run me out of business. And that's not how this works. That's not how the business works. If you run a good, solid product and you're consistent, people are going to show up to what you do. So I think there was a lot of hesitancy at first, because people thought we were going to come in and kind of try to steamroll what they were doing. But there were a few promoters that did take the leap of faith and worked with us in multiple markets. And they saw very quickly that wasn't our intention. We were looking to work hand in hand with the local promoters we were going into the areas of and be a benefit to them. Not only them directly by promoting their dates coming up through our events, but we also showcased their talent. And I think that was a big worry. They thought, oh, we're going to book their local guys and we're going to bury them to ours, or we're going to present them in a negative light and they're going to be reduced in their local market. And that wasn't the case at all. We wanted to showcase and highlight those guys going into those markets and build a relationship and build a bond with them. And we did. And that's how we were able to expand across five provinces. So I think once people started to see that, and that there was legitimate goodwill on our behalf, more promoters started to come on board and work with us. So we had a network of promoters across the country that we were working hand in hand with.
So now, I mean, COVID happens. I don't even think we need to talk about it that much, because everybody's had the same story now. You know, we've had to rebuild shows, had to redo this sort of thing. But when you were in a situation where you couldn't go to other provinces for even when things were opening up again in your own, what were you looking at from that standpoint? Were you thinking, okay, well, I can run locally more, I can do other things more, or did you want to just wait until things totally opened up again?
Truthfully, we were operating out of province more than we were in our home province, because Alberta and Saskatchewan dropped their restrictions and mandates a lot faster than Manitoba. So while we were on lockdown in Manitoba, we were going and doing more live events out in Alberta through multiple markets. So that's actually what kept us afloat and kept us alive, was the ability to do that. But we did take a bit of a hiatus, so to speak. I want to say November 2021. It's when I moved to the States. It's because we had about a year and a half of restrictions or mandates in place that made it very tough to produce in front of a live crowd. But when they put in the mandate for the vaccine passport as a requirement to enter events, we decided just to pause until that was completely done, because we felt it was like a no-win situation. You know, we've had people that have been supporting our product for 14 years, and I didn't feel comfortable telling part of my audience, no, you're not allowed to come. Yes, you people are, you people aren't. So it was becoming a very hot button issue politically, right, as it did across the board in all industry. So we figured we would just sit back and wait for that period to come to an end, which it eventually did, thankfully, and we were able to open up and produce events to everybody, because I never felt comfortable telling people, no, you're not allowed to come to our wrestling show because of your personal choice.
It was such a weird time to be, and still is in many ways, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole either here. I want to talk about now. We had Jimmy Jacobs on the show, like I said, and I joked with him. I said, hey, how did you possibly get talked into coming into Manitoba and Saskatchewan during tornado season with all the crazy weather and everything? And he said he lives for it. And he would talk fondly about times that he'd done this with you before. And how is it when you approach talent, when you say, hey, this is what we're doing. Yeah, I know nobody else does it like this anymore, but would you be in? Do you find that people are automatically receptive, or is there sometimes some arm twisting?
There's not arm twisting right out the gate, but you definitely learn who the real pro wrestlers are very quickly once they get here on the road, because it's definitely not for everybody. In today's wrestling culture, if you're an independent pro wrestler, you probably wrestle once a week, maybe twice a weekend in your region at most. So to be on the road for consistent days where you're bumping every day, traveling every day, getting beat up every day for 10 plus days straight is a complete culture shock to a lot of modern wrestlers, because this structure doesn't exist, as we mentioned, anywhere else in North America. So you learn very quickly the guys who want this and the ones that don't, because it's not for everybody and guys burn out very quickly. But then there's guys like Jimmy, who first started coming on tour with us in 2010, who loves this. Like, he's even told me as recent as today, he's like, if we can get back up to doing tours, we're running every single day of the month, he's here before he's anywhere else. And that includes major companies, because he loves being on the road, going town to town and being a pro wrestler. So if that's something you strive for, this offers a platform to do it. And unfortunately, it's a dying concept, because a lot of people aren't familiar with it, and they're not accustomed to this style of pro wrestling anymore. So it's an interesting time.
when you found out Tessa was in, and she's basically on path now, it seems, to fully re-enter. Like, she's going all the way with what she wants to do. There's been, the XPW announcement and some other things coming up for her, I'm sure. You're giving an opportunity for wrestlers who haven't been on the road in a long time to get kind of their calluses built up again. Is that fair to say?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, even for headline talent, it's not common they're wrestling this many days in a row. And someone like Tessa, for example, this is a great opportunity for her to jump back in feet first and just get right back in the swing of things full force. And she's taking every opportunity to do so and has been excelling at it.
The last time we saw each other before this show, I remember the ring came late, and that's like a small concern, I'm sure, in the list of things you've had happen for your shows. Give us a wacky, weird story that at the time you probably weren't laughing so hard about, but now you can look back and be like, holy crap, I can't believe we made it through that.
Well, I can go back as far as 2 weeks. We had a tour out in Ontario, and it was in Thunder Bay, Ontario. The tour started on the Friday. It was the first of 4 days. The ring truck and trailer left Winnipeg early Friday morning. Yeah. They hit some black ice on the highway about an hour out of Winnipeg, rolled the truck and trailer off the highway, completely totaled and wrecked the truck, trailer gone. And here we are. I was in Thunder Bay the night before. I drove in the night before, now having to put together the pieces on how we're going to get a wrestling show on the road at 7 in the morning. So we had to pull out all the stops. We had a wrestler on the road who luckily owns a courier company, so he had a truck that he pulled off his route. We had AJ Sanchez, who was renting his ring to a local organization that night, pull his ring rental from them, put his rental in the truck, and start heading it to Ontario. And with its trajectory, it was going to get there for about 8 o'clock, and it was going to be a 7 o'clock show. So it was going to be very much similar to the Saskatoon show, where we're going to be setting up as the show was starting. But unfortunately, they got about halfway there to Dryden, Ontario, and there was an accident on the highway, and it was completely closed down. So the ring truck got stuck on the highway. We had to cancel the show the night of, and then that whole day was spent reorganizing the tour and pushing every tour date back a day. So I was on the phone with four different venues in four different cities, trying to accommodate a schedule change. We had to schedule flight changes for the talent because Rowan was in. Other talent were flying out at different times. And just the communication of getting the word out there to the general public that, hey, that show's not happening tonight in your town and not in this town on that night, and having to get the word forth.
Right.
It was a stressful couple days, a very expensive couple days, because having to back up everything and get a truck rental, get a ring rental, put us in debt thousands of dollars just to ensure the tour would still happen before factory. Bring in your truck being written off before the trailer damage. So that was just as of 2 weeks ago. So it's constantly something, and that's, you know, it's a point of pride and almost a point of stupidity at this point, traveling the Canadian roads, but it's a necessity. You can't it's not something you can just say, hey, we're taking the winter off, because you wouldn't be operating and you wouldn't be making any money for 8 months of the year. So you just have to kind of grin and bear it and smile and keep pushing forward.
I think this is going to need to be an interview with a second part down the road, because I want to keep following on this. And this isn't to ride the coattails of your promotion. I work for Dungeon. I've talked to wrestling promotions in BC, Ontario, everywhere. Like, this show is just about wrestling, period. So thank you for being so open about this, because I think it opens a lot of fans' eyes as to what wrestling promoters still go through even to this day. And you are doing something unique, and I find it fascinating. I always watch your tour announcements, and I'm like, God, he's going again. Look at that. I guess that's the question, is what keeps you in this game? What do you think it is? Is it something tangible? Is it something you can't identify? What is it that gives you the motivation to still keep doing this? Because honestly, there's a lot of people, their truck would be written off and be like, well, that was my time as a wrestling promoter. See you later.
Short answer is, I don't want to get a real job. I like playing in the fantasy world of pro wrestling too much. No, it's wrestling is all I've ever known. Like my story dating back to how I became a wrestler, I started watching wrestling at 3 years old, and it was an obsession ever since that point. It's one that turned into a professional wrestling career, and now as a promoter, like, it has consumed my entire life. It's really all I know, and it's all I'm very passionate about. So even though we have these obstacles, I know at the end of the day, when we get it done, it's going to be fulfilling, and we're going to be satisfied for doing so. Just to go back to tell another story of just how things evolve and progress, and you learn patience, and you mature as a person, and you mature as a promoter. At the beginning of this tour, I get a call at 7 a.m. from Tessa on the day she's supposed to arrive, telling me her flight's delayed and she's not going to get in till I think 5 or 6 o'clock, and then she's got a 3-hour drive to where the show is. So that's when the show's supposed to be ending. If I would have got that phone call 10 years ago, I would have been up instantly and in a panic going, oh my God, what are we going to do? Our headliner's not going to be here. And it would have been damage control and just stress the entire day. I literally said, okay, thanks, hung up the phone, went back to bed, woke up 3 hours later, fresh, like didn't even think about it. So you can't stress about what you can't control. There's no reason to beat yourself up over it. You know, but then we, you know, so woke up, went about our day, and sure enough, like her flight ended up getting delayed a couple times, but we ended up extending our show a few hours. It was supposed to be from 7 to 9. We started it at 7:30. It probably went close to 11. And Tessa changed in the car on the highway, literally parked the car, went from the car right to the ring and had a main event wrestling match. And when it was all said and done, all that stress was erased and we were happy, satisfied, and we were fulfilled that we got the job done. And it's always rewarding at the end of the day once the task is complete.
If you missed that story, by the way, go to last week's episode of McGuire on Wrestling. You can hear Tessa talk about the entire thing, but hearing it from your perspective, that's hilarious because she was panicking. But this is the one lesson I think that I can share with every indie promoter out there in Canada right now. I didn't know about the Houston delays and how that's happening, but hint and a half to anybody, if you're booking a talent that has to go through Toronto, they are going to be late.
Every time. And it's getting worse. Like, you always try to bring the talent in the day before if you have the opportunity to do so, but in this case it wasn't an option, so you just had to kind of hope for the best.
Yeah, well, we've even had it in Calgary where they're getting in literally just before show's coming. And yeah, if you have anybody coming through Toronto, just bring them in early, because that's the only way it's going to happen.
That's the only way.
Danny, thank you for this kind of sneak peek in behind what you're doing with CWE. You're everywhere, so I guess if people just find CWE Canada, and it's .ca, right?
Yes, CWECanada.ca, or you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at CWE Canada.
And the Instagram is CWE.Canada.
.Canada, yes, that's correct.
Because there's two out there. Definitely worth checking out again. This was a lot of fun tonight. You made the local fans feel like rock stars. You had a great show, and this conversation is just kind of enlightening. And I think that a lot of fans or listeners are probably going to appreciate it and go, wow, that sounds like a complete nightmare. I'd never do that.
I get hit up somewhat often with people asking about getting into the promotion and the professional wrestling, and my advice is always don't do it. Really don't do it. You're going to lose a lot of money and a lot of hair, I promise.
you're doing the front brush, though. It's good.
Doing what I can, man, while I can.
McGuire on Wrestling.
Gigantic thanks going out to Danny Warren, Danny Duggan, young Danny. Thank you, Danny. That's what I'm trying to say. And thank you for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I hope it gave you some insight into one promoter's look at the world of wrestling. And you know what? There's going to be a lot more big interviews coming. Something is in the works for you there. One thing that we're also working on is another edition of Ask Meltzer. That's right. Going to turn the show over to you. You want to take a crack at Dave? You want to ask him his opinions, his thoughts? As long as you're respectful about it. That's the one caveat to this thing. I know that Dave is a very polarizing figure in the wrestling world. I cover both sides, too. I like listening to both sides. I think I know who we're talking about here. But either way, I wanted to just give you the floor once again to talk to a guy who has one of the richest minds in wrestling. Because let's face it, he's been covering it for 5 decades. So next week, Ask Meltzer. Look for the post coming up soon. If you have it in your heart to leave a 5-star rating, would appreciate that greatly. And we'll be back again next week. Until then, thank you for listening and letting me do what I do. Until next time, play safe, drive safe. Happy seeing you.